Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs.
Issue 131.
Ben Stark of Wondermill Films.
Ben Flanagan of AL.com.
Ben, how are you today?
Doing great, Ben. What's up?
Well, we both saw Star Trek Beyond last week. Matt and I talked about our favorite Star Trek movies, and I thought it'd be fun for you and me to get together and talk about what we thought of the new Justin Lin movie and the newest movie in the J.J. Abrams Bad Robot reboot version of Star Trek. I guess I'll go ahead and start off with, I guess before we go into spoilers, did you like it?
Yes, I liked it a lot. It was a blast. And
me too.
I haven't seen many movies this summer with an infant in the household, so I've had to choose my battles wisely, and my wife and I got a babysitter, and we went and we watched and we loved it, and we had so much fun, and while I don't think that it's necessarily on the level of the J.J. Abrams movies, which I think are excellent, I still had a ton of fun with this movie.
Awesome. Me too. I totally agree. But after this point, we'll just say there's spoilers for everything. And I guess just to kind of counteract that, because I feel like that's the question for me kind of going into it, is where does it sit with these other two? And for me, it's actually, I prefer this to Star Trek Into Darkness. I'm not sure if it quite reaches that first Abrams movie for me, but I really loved Star Trek Beyond a lot. There's the only asterisk there is that some of the action wasn't as easy to follow, because I think maybe bad theater projection, or maybe it's because Justin Lin just isn't quite the director that J.J. Abrams is, or maybe the cinematographers just aren't, on the same level when it comes to this kind of story. But that's about the only difference in terms of quality that I can think of, is just the visual approach. After we watched the first Abrams Star Trek last week, and then my wife and I started to watch Star Trek Into Darkness, got about halfway through, and then ran out of time. We saw Star Trek Beyond this weekend, and we picked up Star Trek Into Darkness again last night, and immediately I was like, oh man, J.J. Abrams is such a good director, and I mean, he'll never be a master, but, you know, he's a really great director, and those movies are a testament to that. And just the staging and the camera placement just isn't quite on the same level in Star Trek Beyond, but it's still really good. But I do think, coming out of it, it may be my favorite script out of all three. The character moments, the way that the villain plays into the themes of the movie, those themes in general, I think those are all just really great examples of what Star Trek does so well, and the kind of dialogue that Star Trek can start in the culture. And I was a big fan of that, and this may be one of those movies that, you know, maybe the next time I watch it, I'll have less of a strong reaction. But I'm kind of hoping that it's one of those movies that just gets better and better every time I watch it.
It probably will, and I agree with you about, the overall look and some of Justin Lin's directing choices. He does some really interesting things. Like, there's this sort of motif of transition shots that have sort of like a spinning quality to it. He goes with a lot of Dutch angles. So he does some different things. But, I agree. I don't think it's a bad theater projection thing, especially during that initial crawl attack on the Enterprise. There are just so many darkly lit shots, and there's obviously deliberate shaking mechanism applied to the camera during a lot of it. And a lot of the action just felt really disjointed. I felt a little discombobulated. And it just wasn't necessarily as accessible as, like, a lot of the Abrams shot action. But like you said, I mean, he is a superior action director to most of the field out there. The guy's special. And that's not to say Justin Lin isn't, because the guy made a couple of great Fast and Furious action movies. So that isn't to say that the action in Star Trek Beyond is bad, because it's quite good and it's quite exciting, and there's some really good set pieces. What separated it for me, I agree that the script is really strong. The movie's really funny. It moves at a really nice pace. As y'all joked in the last episode, the Abrams pace, I think, to an extent, is maintained in this movie. But as I was watching, about two-thirds of the way through, as the action sequence, as Kirk and Jayla and the other Starfleet members were on their rescue mission, right before that action sequence, I thought to myself, you know what? This is like one of the slightest Star Trek movies that I can think of, especially compared to the past two, which I know a lot of hardcore Trek fans complain for being an action-driven sci-fi movie or action-driven Trek movie in particular. But I'm not that strict about it and about it maintaining, I guess, the overall tone of the Trek universe. I think a great science fiction action movie is a great science fiction action movie no matter what. And because it happens to be a part of the franchise, I love those movies so much that they're arguably my favorite movies of the Star Trek franchise. And while I think that this one is a step down slightly from those, I do think it kind of reverts back to maybe a slightly more of an old school Star Trek mentality. And yeah, for lack of a better term here, Stark, I'm going to just say it's a little nerdier than those movies in a few different ways. And I think that's going to be a welcome feeling for most Star Trek fans. Would you agree?
Yes, I totally agree that this is, from the opening shot. The opening shot is Chris Pine's eyes for some reason, and then it pulls back from that and you reveal he's like, in this diplomatic situation with these CGI alien things that look really big from one perspective, but then when they get next to a human, they look pretty small. And immediately I was like, oh man, this is like so dorky. And it's dorky in the same way that, the Voyage Home with the whales are, and it's dorky in the same way that just kind of everything that William Shatner does is, and I mean, any joke that revolved around Data in The Next Generation is just like, it's dorky, it's good natured, it's not cool, and it's, yeah, I totally agree with you there, and I think that is the right tone to strike, and I think that kind of lovable, smart stuff that is still exciting that's where Star Trek is different than Star Wars. I think Star Wars is, one of the things about Star Wars is, if it's not cool, you're doing it wrong. And I think that's the many people's problem with the prequels. There's not a whole lot of cool stuff. And I think that Abrams is a stylist, and it makes a ton more sense for him to be in the Star Wars universe. And in the same way, Justin Lin, I would have never expected him to fit so well, but if you think about it, there is that kind of dorky, jovial quality to those Fast and Furious movies where it's like, we're not, the people making Fast Five are clearly not car people, they're movie people that think that pretending to like cars to, make this action movie. And it's the same kind of thing. I think there's a jovial, familial quality to this that is really appealing and really matches the tone of the series. And yes, I agree, is a different approach than the way that J.J. Abrams makes movies.
Yeah, and you have to think that they were glad they brought in the guy who made Fast and Furious movies when it was time to shoot the Kirk on a dirt bike sequence.
That's one of those things that I have to imagine whenever he came on board. He was like, hey, can we get a dirt bike in this thing? but I think it really worked. I think it was a lot of fun. And it wasn't, in the trailers, it was always sold as this moment where Kirk is this badass. And he's doing, he's kind of the thing that I think all nerds are afraid of the direction of this franchise going in, which is to make cool guy Chris Pine the, all-powerful hero of the series. But this movie doesn't do that, and none of the Abrams movies so far have done that. But in the trailer, they kind of sold it as his cool guy moment. But really, it is such a, like you said, it's a slight moment in that overall action scene, and he's just there to be distracting, and that's all. And then he's got one cool moment, and I liked that stuff, and I like the way that it was a relic of a past starship that he just kind of pulled out of mothballs. I like that approach. And I think that, overall, Justin Lin did a fantastic job. And I think one of the best things he did was bring that ensemble family kind of thing from the Fast and Furious movies over here. And that's one of my favorite things walking out of this movie is that you don't get an idea that this is about one person. And even the way that they did the space, the Final Frontier kind of sign-off thing, they had the whole cast at the end of Star Trek Beyond. They had the whole cast recite parts and pieces of that speech that usually goes to either Kirk or Spock. And I think that that's fantastic. And I think it's not just great for Star Trek. It's not just great for this movie. It's great for the themes of this movie, which are that, hey, we can't do this alone. You know, we need to be unified, and you know, all of us have traumas and issues that we have to work out. But that should not define how we deal with each other going forward. And I think that overall, like I said, going back, I think Star Trek, one of the great things about it is that it gives us these little parables on how we can approach our present. While giving us movies about the future. And I think this movie does that. It says, you know, it directly informs our political climate right now, our cultural climate. And I think that if more of us just chilled out and watched Star Trek Beyond, the news might be a little bit friendlier.
Yeah, and the theme of unity is really interesting here. And like you said, I mean, this movie gets a little bit maybe more philosophical than the previous two, which again which should delight Trek fans. But it's interesting, the opening scene involves, as you mentioned, Kirk, and he's by himself attempting to negotiate and present this gift to these alien people, and he's alone, and it doesn't work out, right? Like he doesn't have his teammates in there with him, and he has to get out of there quick with their help and escape these tiny little creatures. That the situation just becomes chaotic, and perhaps that speaks to the theme, I don't know. But you know, what's interesting about the character Kirk is I think that there are some comparisons that you could fairly make with, say, Chris Pratt's Star-Lord in Guardians of the Galaxy. I think that there are some similarities between the characters, and I found myself sort of wondering if that's the path they're going to stay down with Kirk, as still this sort of rebellious, fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants leader who is kind of a bad boy who still gets the job done for the sake of good. But I do like that they keep him as sort of this intergalactic diplomat who is a very good natural politician who uses those strengths for Starfleet and somebody who actually does believe in the cause and has to live up to legacy and worry about his own legacy. And I love how they've kept playing on that theme of Kirk's father, because that moment in the first movie and how it set Kirk's entire journey up, to me, just remains so powerful. And I don't think it's a cheap callback to that first movie and what made it so great. I think it builds character, and I hope they keep it up, because it's really a strength of the franchise right now.
Oh, well, I'm about to turn in my masculinity card, which honestly, I never got it. It's been pending for a few years now. But I'm about to turn it in and say that whenever in the final fight, I'm going to get the quote wrong, but Krall says that he was born into war. He was born into fighting. That's all he knows. So that's all he's going to, you know, that's how he sees the world. And Kirk says, I see the value in putting my life to saving lives, even if it means giving my own, because that's what I was born into. Like that moment, I was like, oh my God, like it got dusty in the theater. And I think it's just a theme of sacrificial love is something that works really well in movies for a reason. But also I think that, yeah, it ties back to that amazing moment in that first Abrams movie, and the way that they've really done a great job of setting this Kirk apart and giving him a journey. And I think I disagree with you on the whole Star-Lord approach. I think that was more true of the Kirk that we got in the last two movies. But I think here, one of my favorite things about it is that he's very matured, and he's settled down. And the whole, you know, first act, he's basically bored. He's been doing the job for 3 years, and he's just kind of bored with it, and he's lost in his own, like he says, he's lost in space, kind of, without really any perspective. And I think that that's a great direction to take him after Star Trek Into Darkness, where he was the most renegade that he has been so far. He got his ship taken away from him, and he had this renegade moment where he got angry and went to chase after Khan, but then he decides to not kill Khan with the torpedoes and all the people in the torpedoes. And all that, again, pays off in this line at the end of Star Trek Beyond, where we learn, or we are kind of reminded, that Kirk isn't a soldier. He's not a killer. He's a little bit of a rebel, and he thinks outside the box, but he's willing to admit when, you know, he has a weakness and when he needs his crew to fill in his weaknesses. And I think that's a lot more, I mean, in a way, obviously, that does relate to the theme of Guardians of the Galaxy, but I do think that there's a maturity here, and I don't know, I just feel like Chris Pine is so much of an older actor now than he was in those earlier movies, and it's interesting, and it's a really great arc, character-wise, over these three movies. And character is one of the, like I said earlier, one of my favorite things about this movie. I think there's so many great character moments, and I think that the scene of McCoy pulling a piece of shrapnel out of Spock, that whole scene is one of the best things in any of these three Star Trek movies, because it gets that dynamic so right, and it's so funny, and both those actors are just in rare form, and the movie's full of that. Nobody is there to, you know, just show up and cry or react. Everybody has something to do, and everybody is integral to the making sure the bad guy is stopped.
Yeah, and they clearly really believe in Carl Urban too as a significant contributor to this franchise.
I'm about to say something possibly controversial.
Okay,
this occurred to me during Star Trek Beyond. Is there anybody working today that's closer to 1980 version of Harrison Ford than Carl Urban? Like, he's just awesome. Like, if you made him Indiana Jones, I would have a bad day, probably. But I could get used to that a lot easier than most of the other alternatives. He just has, the guy can do anything, and he has a comfort on screen and a self-deprecating quality that you just don't get very often in leading men, you know, that look like Carl Urban.
Right, and he's still a hot dude.
He's like super hot.
That shot, I hate to interrupt you, but there's that shot towards the end of the movie where their mission is over, and it cuts to Kirk and McCoy walking around, and they're both wearing these just badass leather jackets.
It's
and,
the
like,
worst part of the movie.
Gray,
like, both
like,
their shirts are unbuttoned to their belly button.
Like, don't forget, these dudes are hot.
Yeah, it looks like a Florida Georgia Line concert. It's real bad. But yeah, I mean, totally. You just look at the guy's resume, and you're like, he played Judge Dredd and McCoy. And you know, those are the pulls of his resume, and he can do anything. And this movie is, I feel like, a better showcase for him than Star Trek Into Darkness.
It's a bigger showcase for him in Beyond than I think it is even for Spock. Like, I think McCoy plays a larger role, and Spock has a really nice arc in this movie that I think really works. But yeah, I think that Urban has more of an opportunity to shine here, and I think that it will be as important to the franchise moving forward as Zachary Quinto will.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that I think that the nature of the Spock character is that he doesn't have to be the rock star every movie, and I feel like they justified him getting emotional pretty well in the last two movies, but I think that I'm glad we had a movie where Spock doesn't embrace his human side, and that he is, you know, he's dealing with emotions, but he's not losing it. You know, I feel like Into Darkness gave us the moment that we were going to get eventually, that we needed to get, where it's just Spock unhinged and he's just pissed and you see just how powerful he can be. But if we got, you know, if we got Spock as Eraser or Commando every Star Trek movie, it would get pretty ridiculous. And
well, he tries to abandon his human side in this movie. That's part
right,
of his
yeah.
whole thing. So, and I think that's really interesting. I will say, and I know that there have been a lot of loud voices about how Zoe Saldana's Uhura isn't given a ton to do in the first couple of movies, and she is reduced to damsel in distress, and that's been a big thing. She definitely has more to do in this, but I do feel like we're going to hear from those same critics, because by the end of it, she is sort of reduced to an off-screen character who likes jewelry.
Well, but she's also the closest we ever get to the villain. She gives the villain she's kind of represents the crew to Kirk and to Spock, and I mean, yeah, she is at one point literally the damsel in distress, but she gets away. I don't know if we ever.
She does. No, she has more in those scenes. But those scenes with Crawl are good, you know, and they involve Sulu too, obviously. But no, I just thought it was interesting because a lot of Spock's screen time involves talking about, again, leaving Starfleet and leaving Uhura and breaking up with her. And there's a lot of talk about her and about their relationship, and she's nowhere to be seen during that stuff.
Sure, I could see that. I do love that culminates in basically just a joke, like a gag, like reaction from Carl Urban with the necklace and all that stuff.
Well, this argument, too, is like, well, what role did Uhura have in the series? How crucial is the character to the overall story moving forward?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, how involved do, like, even hardcore Star Trek fans really want her to be, and at what cost does that have for characters like Spock and like McCoy and Kirk?
Yeah, I think that you have to stick with those three as the big ones for better or worse. But I think that, look, I mean, she's the communications officer, and what she does in this movie is communicate and with the villain and you know, represent the Starfleet perspective to him and understand his perspective. And in the end, she figures out who he really is. And I think that speaks to her role in the series and her character. And I think that it's a pretty great representation. So
okay. Well, let's transition into Crawl since you said that. A villain I think is really strong and dangerous and a lot of fun, but I do think that if it looked like a home run, it ends up falling just shy of the wall at the warning track. And I think that they end up sort of, I don't know, not whiffing on the character, because I like the background and what they ultimately find out, and it is interesting, but golly, just visually, I'm just disappointed in the choice that they made, where they decided, look, we have a movie star here, let's show his, you know, let's barely show his face, and let's desert this amazing creature design and makeup effect that we've had for most of the movie. I hate that they couldn't finish the job there, personally. And it's like, look, we've got Idris Elba. Let's show Idris Elba's beautiful face, even if there is a little bit of an enhancement.
I didn't see it as that. I mean, the whole idea of his character is that he's burying who he is underneath all of these different identities and all these different races and species that he's kind of integrated into himself, and he's lost himself.
No,
At that point,
he should just be far gone. I mean, he is the villain of the movie, and I did think that towards the end there was going to be a moment where he was going to help Kirk in that chamber, but he obviously didn't. But no, I mean, it's kind of like the superhero problem too, where it's like the mask is a detriment to what we're trying to do.
Yeah, but I think
if we can take them out of the mask as often as possible and show Robert Downey Jr.'s face, we're in better shape here.
Now, I don't. I think if you hadn't seen who he started as, then you wouldn't. What he ended up as wouldn't matter. Like that.
Wouldn't the video be enough though? Wouldn't like the video to me? Like if it just showed him in the video and they were like, "That's Crawl."
Oh, so you're saying the fact that he whatever, like his skin tone was closer to what it naturally is, and he basically just had a nose prosthetic at the end. That's your issue?
Well, it just,
and that he didn't have
blue
scales.
I thought Idris Elba gave an awesome performance, and his like he's got such a great command, and his voice is so cool. Plus, I thought that the makeup design was outstanding. You know, and it's kind of like, it's like in past Star Trek movies, like was it Undiscovered Country, or was it which one is Christopher Lloyd in? He's in
Search for Spock, right? Yeah.
So he's in Search for Spock. So it's like by the in the last 10 minutes of Search for Spock, it's not like, oh, let's take him out of his Klingon makeup and show Christopher Lloyd. He's
but
a big
literally,
star.
Literally, the function of his power is that he changes.
Right.
So you have to do that. Like, you have to. He's, like, in the movie, throughout the movie, he's becoming less and less, for lack of a better term, monstrous-looking and more normal-looking. So by the end, he's almost there. He's almost got back to, he just needs to, like, suck more life energy out of people. That's
right, which,
function.
Again,
that's not a marketing or a casting thing. That's just the story.
I think they made an effort to use the story to further the marketing agenda and the casting agenda. I do. I'm sorry. I do. It just came off a little obvious to me. But again, sucking the life out of people, that whole thing, again, that was straight up just like B-movie nerdiness, like in a really fun way.
Absolutely. Now, I mean, if we're going to pick on the movie, there's one thing that occurred to me. I think it's pretty, unless I missed the line, I think it's pretty crummy that Captain Kirk gives that one ensign girl the MacGuffin and makes her hide it.
Yeah.
And she gets killed, and then he never asks about her. He's never like, hey, what happened to that ensign that I definitely endangered when I gave her the MacGuffin in the movie? That's the thing that occurred to me later. I was like, oh, that's just like a little moment, you know, where he realizes what he did, you know, to that crew member. But
well, so in a big moment to pick on that I think a lot of people are going to hate about this movie is when they fight the bad guy with music.
Oh, I love that.
There's that. Well, can't you see though? People saying this is the dumbest part of this movie is that they're calling back to the first Abrams Star Trek movie, but they're also using a rock and rap song as a weapon against the bad guy. I don't know. I can just see people putting in the same category as both of their moms are named Martha category, you know? Like
no.
As things that
totally
people
different.
Just sort of bitch about just for the sake of it. I mean, I thought it was a pretty fun moment.
No, because this was set up, and this was well explored, and it speaks to the overall theme, which is harmony and working together and unity that will, and if we do that, it breaks down kind of like the malevolent groupthink of other things. They're literally intercepting the signal from one drone thing to another. So I think it totally plays. I think it's uniquely Star Trek. I think obviously you can't do that in a Star Wars movie. I mean, that might be something where it's a Guardians of the Galaxy moment, because again in Guardians of the Galaxy they basically beat the villain by dancing to the Jackson 5. So I think that is probably a clear influence there.
You know what else they did, Stark?
What?
They sabotaged Crawl.
Huh, yeah. And they fought the power, which they were spurred on to do earlier. But maybe it's just the music choices and they just picked good music so it doesn't bother me.
Oh, yeah.
And I like that McCoy calls it classical music. I think that was
a good line.
All of us were waiting on that from the first Abrams movie, you know, where it's like, why is this guy listening to music that's 1,000 years old?
And yeah, Spock says, I believe it is. that was a really good line. And okay, so that should bring us to this new character who may or may not continue. I hope she doesn't suffer the same fate as poor Alice Eve did from movie
right.
to movie.
Dude, we were watching Into Darkness last night, and I was like, so what happened to her? Like, as an actress, like, she just, like, disappeared.
Well, I said it during the movie to Tess. I was like, hey, where's Alice Eve? You know, like, she was like, ready for the next mission. You know, she was going on the 5-year mission or whatever. So this character, Jayla, and forgive me, I don't know the actress's name who plays her, but what did you think of Jayla? Because they're who I want to call J-Lo all the time, but
J-Law. Like,
yeah. So I thought that she was a fun character, and she was a great, she and Scotty had a really fun dynamic, and I thought she served a pretty great purpose. But there was, I guess, a moment down the stretch where I realized she's kind of nowhere to be found right now, and it's just not a factor at all. And she certainly plays into, again, the idea of unity and working with people with whom you're less familiar, and you know, that works to the movie's advantage, I think, in a lot of ways. But I think she kind of got reduced to being sort of a background artist down the stretch when she was this brand new character that has such an interesting look and obviously played an important role about halfway through the movie. Did you like Jayla?
Yeah, I mean, talk about awesome makeup design. And I thought her performance was good. I think she was a lot more naturalistic. And there's a, I don't know, there's just a youthful energy to her that I like when she's like slumps down in a captain's chair and Kirk is threatened by it. I think that's cool. Yeah, I mean, honestly, everybody kind of takes a back seat there. During the final fight between Kirk and Krall, like, I guess McCoy and Spock are just like, doing donuts around the skyscraper.
Yeah, they're just flying around until they're
Yeah, cute. Yeah, because they're still in that thing for a long time, but they don't really have anything to do. And we don't really check in on anybody during that. So, yeah, I think that that's a fair point, but at the same time, she wasn't in the first act either. So I think that she's a new character, but I don't think she's, like, a major character. And it is one of those things. It's kind of like her Kirstie Alley in Search for Spock, or I don't see the need to add new characters to this cast.
I kind of thought that there would be at least a moment where maybe, like with Krall's little henchman who infiltrates the Enterprise and obviously leads them on that ambush death mission during the first act, like, I thought that there might be a moment where it's like, why should we trust her? She may have ulterior motives, but there never is. She's pretty much good all the way.
Yeah, but I think that speaks to the strength of the movie and this crew is that, look, they're going to trust people until you give them, you know, until people give them a reason to not trust them. And she was vetted by Scotty early on. You know, I feel like Kirk can trust Scotty, and if Scotty thinks that this girl is somebody they need to pay attention to, then he's worth listening to.
Yeah. No, totally. And you know, before whenever we finish here, like, I think it's worth noting that Anton Yelchin, like, it just obviously there's just that lingering presence, and we know obviously what has happened to him in real life. I thought he was really good in this movie, and I've had issues with his performances, like, in general. Like, I've actually really enjoyed him as Chekhov in all three of these movies, and I thought he had a lot to do in this, and was really funny and really vibrant, and he is as big a part of this ensemble that they originated in the 2009 reboot, and he has been a big part of it, and I'm sad to see him go. And I thought that it was a really sort of ironically touching moment there at the end where we're at Kirk's surprise birthday party, and he raises a glass, and he says, to Starfleet, and then he says, to absent friends, and it cuts, and Anton Yelchin just in the middle of the shot right there.
Yeah.
And I was kind of waiting for the post, you know, the post credits, or, you know, the little PS moment there where they obviously say in memory of Leonard Nimoy, and then they say for Anton. I thought that was a really sweet moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's heartbreaking, and he's going to be sorely missed. And I think they actually gave him some new stuff here too. He seemed to be a bit of a womanizer. Like, early on, you see him, like, get kicked out of a girl's apartment or whatever.
That was him?
I think so. And then later on, he's kind of checking out Jayla. So I don't know. I feel like they had plans, you know, to take him into this young guy who seems kind of nerdy and seems kind of out of place with how young he is, but he's actually kind of a ladies' man. He's like Daniel Radcliffe
on
Extras.
At the party, yeah, at the party, he's talking to the alien lady about whiskey being invented by a little old Russian lady.
Right.
So, yeah. So, I mean, and as a side note, my wife Tess told me after the movie that somebody had suggested that at least for this version of Star Trek, they wouldn't recast Chekhov and that he would just be gone and replaced by a different character maybe. Have you heard the same? And
yeah,
what do you think of the idea of just eliminating a core character?
I think that's great. Honestly, I think Abrams has all but confirmed that, actually. Yeah, I think that he made that character his own. And I think there's natural story reasons, you know, to let Chekhov go. And I think that, I think it would be a disservice to just, you know, fill that role in. And I mean, it seems kind of crass to just do, you know, fantasy casting, his role on the team at least. But honestly, a lot of what he did in the, you know, on the crew is something that Jayla could do. So that's almost a way that they could bring her back. Again, that seems kind of a weird thing to say, but,
no, I mean, it's a real thing that Paramount is having to deal with, you know, because they're probably going to hear from the originator, the actor's like family or whatever about that character. And he obviously has a legacy that I'm sure he would like to see continued in the Star Trek franchise, but you know, sometimes tragedy gets in the way, you know, and they have to make decisions that preserve the legacy of Anton Yelchin and also support the legacy of the character. So, you know, they're faced with a, you know, a difficult decision, but I'm just, you know, it seems like so far they're doing everything in their, you know, everything in their power to honor Anton Yelchin and what he meant to the franchise.
Absolutely. And I think it's a good way to go out. I think in general, I'm just blown away at how great these three movies are. I think they're a high point in the summer blockbuster landscape. I think that they're movies made by people that care, starring people that like each other, and just this cast that they've assembled. I'm so excited they basically announced there's going to be another one. It was one of those, I was afraid that it was not going to come back after the first one because it was taking a bit for the next one to come together. And then, you know, for a while, Bob Orsi was going to be directing this, and then this one looked like it was in trouble. And so I hope that they've got a bit of their sea legs. I think Simon Pegg is a great member of the writing team, so I hope that they stick with him. I hope that Justin Lin comes back for another one. I hope we get a few more movies with this cast because I think that, Star Trek is on a hot streak, you know, so for me at least. So I really hope that another one comes out pretty soon, and I hope it's as good as this one.
Yeah, pretty clear, too, that Scotty got a few more lines this time around, don't you think?
Absolutely. I mean, he had the emotional moment, basically, where he spurred on Jayla to go do the right thing. So, yeah, he was also in better shape, I think, than the last time. So, yeah, I mean, I think Simon Pegg earned it. You know, I think he did a good job with the screenplay. And, look, if you do a good job, then, yeah, you can give yourself a few lines
it's not his first writing rodeo, you know.
No,
like a lot of people will forget. I mean, he's written a couple of the best comedies in recent memory, you know, co-written them at least. So, yeah, I mean, if I'm Paramount or if I'm whoever in charge of hiring the next writer, I mean, why wouldn't Simon Pegg be a pretty clear choice? I mean, the guy's clearly talented. He's clearly a fan. He's clearly genre-minded and obviously cares about story and comedy. And, I mean, yeah, he's clearly very talented. He gives a good performance again.
Yeah, and he's been very outspoken on his opinion on summer blockbusters and Hollywood, and so yeah, I think he really does care about making something special. And Star Trek has a long history of letting its cast members get behind the camera, with Leonard Nimoy directing two movies and Jonathan Frakes directing a few and William Shatner directing one. So I'm glad you liked it, and I would recommend everybody go see it while they can. I don't know what is it doing at the box office? Is it doing okay?
It made $60 million. It won the weekend. It's
okay.
Down. It's down from the first Star Trek and also Into Darkness. I think the first one had 75, the second one had 70, and now this one had 60. So it's down from those, but relative to the rest of summer 2016, it's a pretty strong opening.
Yeah, and again, I mean, I said this on our Ghostbusters episode. It's been a good summer, despite despite some big flops and big critical disappointments. I think there's been enough really fun movies out there, and this is one of the most fun that I got to see all summer.
Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.